From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Put yourself in the shoes of an ordinary American Muslim right now, and it's easy to feel the unease. A murderous husband and wife go ballistic in San Bernardino, and a leading presidential candidate goes after you, all Muslims. And that's just the latest. These are challenging times. This hour On Point, we're talking with American Muslims about what's going on and their lives in our shared country now. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Muslim Americans, tell us what you see, how it feels. After Paris, after San Bernardino, after Trump, what's your American reality? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We know the range out there. Here was Donald Trump once more at that South Carolina meeting on Monday night. It said no entry for Muslims from outside the U.S.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on.
Of course, there's a huge reaction to this and a huge debate and pushback on this from all quarters still. If you're an American Muslim listening, watching, here's New York Mayor Bill de Blasio reacting to Trump.
How could the front runner for a major party nomination literally be suggesting a religious test on who gets to come into the country? That is a dangerous, dangerous statement. That's why he must be confronted.
All kinds of thoughts here, including from some very prominent Muslims in this country, that this is exactly what ISIS would want. Here's Nahid Awad. He's head of the Council on American Islamic Relations, saying Donald Trump playing right into the hands of ISIS.
This is exactly what ISIS wants from Americans, to turn against each other. And for that, Donald Trump and other candidates who are targeting American Muslims are doing great service to ISIS.
These are rough, strange times. With us today, three American Muslims, and we welcome them each. Joining me now from Arlington, Virginia, is Rizwan Jaka. He's chair of the Board of Trustees at the All Dulles Area Muslim Society, or Adams Mosque in Sterling, Virginia, one of the biggest mosques in the country. Welcome to On Point, Rizwan Jaka. Thank you very much for joining us.
Tom, thank you very much for having me.
And Hussam Elush joins us from Riverside, California. He's the executive director of the Los Angeles chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations. Hussam Elush, welcome. Thank you very much for being here.
Great to be on the show. Thank you, Tom.
And from Philadelphia, Camila Rashad is here. She is the Muslim chaplain at the University of Pennsylvania, founder of the Muslim Wellness Foundation. Camila Rashad, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Hussam, may I come to you first? You're right there in California that has been the center of all this for the last several days. Everyone was shocked by this terrible killing. And at the same time, many have been shocked by the political reaction to it. Is this country keeping its balance when it comes to seeing, understanding, communicating with its American Muslim citizens?
Well, for the most part, I would say yes, people have been keeping the balance. Most people are sensitive.
We're getting some feedback there. Rizwan, let me put the same question to you there outside of Washington in Arlington, Virginia.
Well, first, Tom, our thoughts and prayers continue to be with the victims of San Bernardino attack, as well as the Colorado Clinic attack and
yes,
the Paris attack and others. And, you know, it's something that, you know, from the mainstream society, interfaith community, Jewish, Christian communities and other faith communities, they're keeping the balance and they're, you know, actually coming out to support the Muslim community in this time where there is this unfortunate backlash. But obviously, you know, the rhetoric, as you have mentioned, you know, from some of the presidential candidates has been very disturbing and un-American. And, you know, God tells us in the Quran that you respond to bad with good. And so the Muslim community is responding to this bad with good by overcoming these challenges, by continuing to live our lives, contributing to our country, doing community service activities. We're doing open houses this weekend at our mosque, and that's something that we need to continue to do. Our Girl Scouts will be hosting that open house this Sunday evening. And so our interfaith partners are planning vigils to counter bigotry, and that is something that we truly appreciate. Our fellow Americans standing with us against this very unfortunate rhetoric.
Camila Rashad in Philadelphia, you deal with young Muslims there at the university as Muslim chaplain, University of Pennsylvania. How are they processing this? Not just the last few days, but the drumbeat we've seen over time now. Rise of ISIS, Charlie Hebdo, everything we saw in Paris, and now here we've got this in the United States. I mean, all Americans have had to deal with this horrible threat of mass shootings. When Muslims are involved, surely there's more focus on some of the students that you deal with, and I wonder how they're dealing with that.
Well, you know, this is actually reading days and finals at the University of Pennsylvania. And what I've been able to gather from my students is that they're feeling extremely exhausted. That, you know, as you stated, the year began with the Charlie Hebdo attacks in Paris and continued with attacks at Boko Haram. But also, you know, kind of leading into the summer months, there was also a planned foiled attack, but planned for the Muslim community in Islamburg, New York. There has also been, you know, the Chattanooga shooting, the Charleston massacre. So this has been a kind of a disappointing year in terms of the levels of violence that we see in the country. And, you know, they're trying very hard to kind of maintain their sense of focus and purpose at the university, but also really feeling as if on a daily basis they're being asked to justify their love of a religion, which is beautiful, but bearing the burden of this expectation of somehow explaining the insanity of a group like Daesh. So what they're feeling is at times a sense of despair and hopelessness, but also a very, I think, quiet and intentional pride in who they are. And we must remember that for a young person who's 19-20 years old, the last 15 years have been, you know, kind of a constant daily struggle with what it means to be American, what it means to be Muslim. And so the 9/11 attacks has really shadowed and kind of been a cloud which has followed them through much of their childhoods and adolescence. So for them, And I think, you know, this is the call for all Americans, that for we have a generation of Muslim and non-Muslim Americans whose lives have been framed by this violent incident and then subsequent attacks and wars. So I think it's our responsibility really to think about the impact it's having on our young people and how they view their sense of place in the world at this moment.
Hussam Elush in California, I hope we've got you back. Do you talk with American Muslims who feel their loyalty being challenged, I don't know, in a formal way or in a casual way in the streets?
Well, unfortunately, not only me talking with them, nationwide, our care offices have been receiving on a regular basis, especially in the past few days, a huge increase in the number of hate incidents, death threats received by mosques, vandalism against Muslim-owned businesses, imams receiving death threats. I've been dealing with it on a regular basis, activists, care activists, myself. It seems there is a segment. I mean, in all fairness, most people have been very friendly, sympathetic, understanding that you can't blame a whole community for the act of a few bad elements, no matter which community that is. We all stand together. We're all hit and hurt by the horrific events of you know, what happened last Wednesday in San Bernardino, or any time there's an attack in Colorado Springs or any other place. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, we have to admit there is a very active, very effective, unfortunately, Islamophobia industry that continues to try to portray Muslims as evil, as a threat to this country. And we do have irresponsible leaders or self-serving politicians who unfortunately exploit such tragedies to turn heat and hatred against American Muslims and Islam in general. So we do have factors. We do have a polarized country today, and we do have a segment that follows. I mean, these political leaders who insult Islam, who defame Islam and Muslims and call for almost lynching mob attitude towards Muslims, do have a base and do have people cheering for them, and they need to be challenged, those leaders and their base.
Rizwan, you had the head of Homeland Security at your mosque yesterday, talking about cooperation there with the Department of Homeland Security, American law enforcement, and more. Among your parishioners, if that's the right word, do you feel a sense that they are
being separated out, that their loyalty is being challenged, that their good citizenship is being challenged for in killing far away by somebody else?
Well, yes, we had, of course, Secretary Johnson with us on Monday, and we appreciate his commitment and President Obama's commitment to partnership with the American Muslim community for national security. We are partners in national security, and we appreciate, the reflection about, that Muslims should not be vilified for the act of a few criminals. Obviously, we condemn terrorism, we condemn violent extremism, and we are the first line of defense for our country against violent extremism coming from people that claim to be Muslim. But as you had said that, and we know that actually the overwhelming majority of murders, violence, and mass shootings are done by people that are not Muslim. And definitely there is a feeling, and this has been not just now, for the past several years with the whole, false anti-Sharia movement there's been a whole kind of effort to question the loyalty of American Muslims. And it is very clear by our faith, the Fiqh Council of North America, the religious body that issues rulings. There's a religious ruling against terrorism. They have a religious ruling that clearly articulates that by the Islamic principles, by Islamic law, that Muslims are loyal to the land. They follow the law of the land, the Constitution of the United States. We have several thousand American Muslims serving in the U.S. military. Our community has several, as many people that have served in the military. We actually lost one of our community members who was in the U.S. Army that lost his life defending this nation, and he's buried in Arlington Cemetery. We are Americans, and we love our country.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. After Paris, after San Bernardino, after Trump, we are talking with American Muslims about how they now see the country, the world, radicalization, prejudice, the president's call for them to confront extremism, Trump's call for a ban on entry, and how they're making sense of their country, its politics, right now. You can join us. American Muslims, how are you processing these last few days and weeks? How are you keeping your balance, your cool? What feels solid and dependable here now? What feels scary, up in the air? What's your best advice on how we confront radicalization, fears of violence, and maintain full, proper respect for fellow citizens of all faiths? Rizwan Jaka is with us. He is from the Adams Mosque, chair of the Board of Trustees there in Sterling, Virginia. The head of Homeland Security, Jay Johnson, was there. Just yesterday, he stood with an imam and leaders from other faiths and appealed directly to the American Muslim community.
Terrorist organizations overseas have targeted your communities. They seek to pull your youth into the pit of violent extremism. Help us to help you stop this.
Rizwan Jaka says, yes, we are prepared to help. We have been and we will. But the confrontations here can be fierce and ugly. Just last month, after the attacks in Paris, a group of people in Fredericksburg, Virginia, attended a public hearing to protest plans to replace Fredericksburg's Islamic Center, a normal zoning meeting that was anything but normal.
Nobody wants your evil cult in this town.
Right.
And I'll tell you what. I will do everything in my power to make sure that does not happen.
We don't want it.
Because you are terrorists. Every one of you are terrorists. I don't care what you say.
Kind of weird with the music there, but you get the idea. Very, very fierce opposition. The civil engineer who went to make the case for the zoning change, Samer Shalabi, talked with the Freelance Star with his reaction.
The worst part was not necessarily that the gentlemen that were expressing their opinion in such a way was the people start clapping and cheering, and that's what I was kind of like more taken by.
And there you have just a little bit of the flavor of some of these interactions. Hussam Elouch is with us as well today from Riverside, California, Executive Director of the L.A. Chapter of the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Camila Rashad is with us, Muslim chaplain at the University of Pennsylvania, also with the Muslim Wellness Foundation. And I want to bring more in right away. Sarah in Cedar Falls, Iowa. Sarah, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to kind of speak. I'm a convert to Islam. I converted 6 years ago. And I just kind of want to speak to the movement of hatred that's happening right now with Donald Trump and a call for unity in the name of peace, because I really feel that the hatred that's being propagated is sort of similar to the time of Hitler, where we're looking at blanket statements about masses of people without looking at, you know, individual acts. And the growing hatred and discrimination that's happening is frightening. And I think it is a time to strengthen the interfaith movement, a time to sit down and talk to our neighbors and really keep the communication lines open about what Islam really is about, which I really appreciate you doing today with your show.
Sir, I appreciate your call. Hussam, you know, we heard the head of your organization saying, look, there's a danger here. ISIS wants division. And they're getting it. Do you see that? Is the division happening? Sarah doesn't want it. Many people don't want it. But is it happening, Hussam?
Of course. I mean, let's put things in perspective. ISIS represents only a tiny fraction of a fraction of a fraction of 1.6 billion Muslims around the world who reject ISIS, who've been fighting ISIS. They're at the forefront in Syria and Iraq and Yemen, many other places, fighting ISIS on the ground. In Syria, thousands of people are dying as they fight the barbarism of the Assad regime and the ISIS terrorist groups. So, you know, our best allies, our strongest allies are actually Muslims around the world who hate ISIS, despise ISIS for many reasons, including the fact that ISIS falsely claims to be Muslims. But ISIS rhetoric is about, or actually ISIS narrative, I would say, is about polarizing the world, is by saying everybody hates you Muslims and we're the only ones who can defend you. And in order for that message to resonate, it needs to be echoed by someone else on the other side. You know, it takes two to tango. It wouldn't, you know, if no one repeats, no one echoes ISIS' message, most Muslims will continue to ignore ISIS, especially Muslims in the West and around the world. But when you have someone with a message that says, yes, Muslims, you are the enemy. Yes, Muslims, we will not allow you to be in this country. Yes, Muslims, we're going to force you to wear registration IDs in America, and we're going to shut down your mosque. What he's doing, he's echoing the message of ISIS, and he's reinforcing that polarization, that animosity, and adversarial relationship that should exist. Basically, he is fueling this war of religion that ISIS dreams of having. And that's a major threat. So what people like Trump and other demagogues are engaging in is not only immoral or unconstitutional, it is actually a major threat to our national security. It actually puts our men and women in uniform. It puts average Americans around the world at risk, and he should be held responsible for that.
Tess in Buffalo, New York. Tess, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Okay. What do you see?
Well, I was saying that I have a sister, and she recently married someone who is from Turkey, and, you know, he is Muslim.
Okay.
And I never once in the entire time that he became a part of my family and I got to know him thought about that. To me, it was always about the fact that he was Turkish. That was part of his identity. That was something that was, like, really obvious and that I would see in his personality.
Mm-hmm.
But recently, just in the past couple of weeks, just because of everything that's going on in the climate in America right now, the fact that he's Muslim, in my own brain, has become, like, much more prevalent and much more a part of his identity to me. And I think that's really important, actually, and kind of, like, a good thing for me, is to, like, see him not only as, like, the Turkish identity, but to also recognize the hardships that he's going through as a Muslim.
Hardships like what, Tess? Like what?
Like this conversation we're having right now. Like the fact that we're talking about a group of people with such different ideologies as a group of people, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I don't have to go through that with my, like, ambiguous look and my ambiguous religion. Like, no one talks about me on the radio as a group.
Mm-hmm. And he's got that. Does he feel it in his daily life? Does he voice that? Does he say, I feel uncomfortable sometimes?
I absolutely don't. I don't think so. I don't think that he identifies himself as, like, a religious person, you know? It's just sort of, like, how he was raised and the religion that he was raised in. We've never even discussed it. And I think that's why it was so easy for me to never even consider it or to think about it. I always just thought of the fact that he was Turkish and that was a part of his, you know, upbringing and who he was.
But it's out there now as an issue, whether he wants it to be or not. And in a way, I really can't recall in my lifetime for members of one religious group in this country. I mean, there was extra attention after 9/11, to be sure. But there was also very careful attention right from the top, from the president at that time, George W. Bush, to say, you know, let's stay united with our fellow citizens who happen to be Muslim. Tess, thanks for your call. One more right here. Aaron in Detroit. Aaron, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I want to make this perfectly clear. I have a lot of people in my neighborhood that are Muslim. I have coworkers that are Muslim.
Yep.
And I know for a fact that they do not hold the extreme beliefs that ISIS is proclaiming. But what I do take issue with is that it's being misrepresented that ISIS does not represent Islam, because they are literally following the Quran. There is a chapter 5, verse 33, that states that any who strive against Allah or his messenger should be slaughtered. That is part of that religion. Now, of course, the 1.2 billion Muslims that was quoted by one of your guests don't act out on that. But ISIS is literally claiming to follow their religious belief.
Aaron, we've got it. Let me take it to my panel, if I may. I mean, dip deep into the Bible sometimes, and you will find some pretty fierce stuff in there as well, I must point out. But not exactly the same as this. Hussam, this always comes up. How do you respond to it?
Yeah, I mean, with all due respect, Aaron, and I do appreciate you calling, because that helps enrich the conversation. The problem is, you are doing exactly what extremists like ISIS are doing, which is taking verses from Scripture, whether it's the Quran or the Bible, or out of context. The Quran extremely, unequivocally prohibits acts of aggression. What you're quoting is the only condition for any people, including Muslims, to engage in violence is in self-defense, in the concept of just war, meaning if you are attacked, your land is being attacked, you are being killed, you have the right to defend yourself. But you cannot aggress and transgress. You cannot kill innocent people. You cannot target people who have nothing to do with the war. And war should be a temporary thing. The goal, what's permanent is peace, justice. So what they're doing, actually, they're going completely against the teachings of Islam. The Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, said, whoever kills an innocent person would not even get to scent, would not even get the scent of paradise, meaning they will never even dream of getting in paradise. So I understand, if you open any scripture, and I studied at Christian schools, if you open any scripture, you will find text in it that if a person has no background of the context of it, they can take it and maybe use it to justify murdering an abortion clinic doctor, thinking they're helping, saving lives. And that is the dangerous thing about ISIS, is that they don't have the religious foundation. Mostly they're criminals. Mostly they are people who suddenly had a religious awakening because of the political situation in their area, and then held the weapons and started committing these murders. That's why, in my opinion, the best counter to ISIS, the best antidote to ISIS, is Islam itself, actually.
Camila Rashad, do you get this kind of challenge to your Islamic faith, and how do you respond to it?
Yes, I mean, this is a question that a lot of people have. And what I wanted to, you know, share with you and some of the listeners is that the Nigerian author Chimamanda Adichie, she talks about the danger of a single story. And so depicting an entire group in one-dimensional ways has very negative consequences, not just for that group, but for everyone. So showing a people as one thing or only one thing, she says over and over again, it's what they then become in people's imagination. And the consequence is that it robs everyone of dignity, and it makes our recognition of equal humanity difficult, emphasizing how different we are. And I think this constant conflation with Muslims being foreign to this country or being relatively new to this country is false. You know, I'm a descendant of enslaved Africans, a third of whom, almost 30%, were Muslim. So from the very founding of this country, there has been a Muslim presence. It has been recognized. So when we kind of fall into a conversation about American Muslims having to prove their loyalty or prove their Americanness, I think it does us all a disservice when Muslims have been integral to the foundation and to the development of this country from its inception. So I think, you know, shows like this, you know, this conversation is actually great because it's able to show the diversity of the American Muslim community, but also that we have been in conversation and dialogue with our neighbors for decades, if not centuries. And so we cannot also give in to the idea that somehow Islam is here and poses a threat to the Constitution or to American life when we have contributed to both. And so when we talk about kind of the legal and political implications of, you know, conversations, again, falling along a single story, I think what's not included in that narrative is that there's a very real and palpable emotional impact that happens and starts to begin to reverberate throughout the community. And it is one of anxiety and increased fear that there are some of my students particularly who think about whether or not their normal kind of developmental exploration of religion and spirituality will be seen as pathological, that it's somehow indicative of them going down a path of radicalization because they're curious about who they are. And so just beginning to really obstruct the natural development of young people, I think, is also very egregious, that they cannot explore their religious and racial and cultural identities for fear that it will be cast in a very negative light. When they've grown up, you know, in suburban and urban places, they're very much American, but they begin to be cast as somehow foreign and antithetical to American society. And so we must always remember that there is no single story, that we are a very diverse, one of the most racially diverse religious community in the country. And this is our strength and our beauty. And it's also a reflection of the American public.
But it's no cakewalk out there from any angle right now. We know that. We're going to dig right on into the realities here. We're talking with American Muslims about their realities, the nation's realities right now. Forgive me, Camilla. Let me get a caller in right here, if I may, from Austin, Texas. John, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me. Mm-hmm. Really great discussion. Good panel. Something that concerns me about this whole dilemma that we're facing here, I think we can all agree that demagogues like Donald Trump, bigots, are a problem. The question we need to ask ourselves is why something like that is thriving. The concerning part that your panel, I think, is missing is that, you know, if we can all sit here and say, not all Muslims. The fact of the matter is 1 to 10% by Pew polls are saying that, yes, in fact, those Muslims believe in Sharia law, and those Muslims, that percentage, any percentage of those people that believe that come into the States, we're going to be looking at regular attacks. Right. What do your panels have to say if we're debating not all Muslims, and somebody sneaks a nuclear bomb into Washington? Anyway, that's my point. Thanks very much.
Well, John, I've got your call, but I don't know quite where to go with that. I mean, that's a pretty big what if. Imagine if that were put right back in your lap as a Christian. If you're talking about ISIS terrorists, maybe that's one thing, or Al-Qaeda, but talking about Muslims in general, Hassam, how do you respond?
I would say, what if another Timothy McVeigh gets access to a nuclear bomb? What if some crazy dude, who I don't know what kind of religion he has or she has, does anything? We cannot live in fear. This is exactly what paranoia is. This is exactly what terrorists try to do. They make us feel a loss of sense of security. So when we do that, then we start pointing at each other as a group. This is exactly what terrorism is all about. Terrorism is not about killing 300 million Americans or 6 billion people in the world. It's about instilling fear and paranoia. We cannot just live in fear. What we can do is install good security measures that are legal, constitutional, make sure that everybody feels equal. I mean, putting the burden on Muslims only, I mean, with all due respect, I do appreciate the very positive message coming from the president. But to even make it a point to say we need Muslims to do more to challenge extremism in them, it's almost giving the impression that the premise is wrong. Muslims are doing, have been doing. It's our stake. It's our religion. We have to do something because it is being misrepresented. The point is, we are all partners in it as Americans. Today, even in America itself, as Rizwan correctly said earlier, the majority of domestic terrorism happening in the U.S., the overwhelming majority of shootings, mass shootings in the U.S., do not happen at the hands of people claiming to be Muslims.
On Point is sponsored by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses made in America. They are engineered for comfort and long-lasting support with just the right sink, just the right bounce. Two technologies, latex foam and memory foam, come together for better nights and brighter days. It's outrageous comfort at a polite price. Here's the great part. You can try one risk-free for 100 days with free delivery and returns. Get $50 toward any mattress by visiting casper.com/onpoint. That's casper.com/onpoint. And remember to use promo code ONPOINT at checkout to receive this special offer. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. After Paris, after San Bernardino, after Trump, we're talking with American Muslims about how they now see the country, the world, radicalization, prejudice, the president's call for them to confront extremism, Trump's call for a ban on entry, how they're making sense of all this. Rizwan Jaka is with us. He's chair of the Board of Trustees at one of the biggest mosques in the country, the so-called Adams Mosque outside of Washington in Sterling, Virginia. Hussam Alos joins us from Riverside, California, right next to San Bernardino territory there. He's executive director of the Los Angeles chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations. And from Philadelphia, Camila Rashad is with us, Muslim chaplain at the University of Pennsylvania. You can join the conversation this hour. What's your best advice on how we confront radicalization, fears of violence, and maintain full, proper respect for fellow citizens of all faiths? How are you hearing President Obama on this, Donald Trump on this? Donald Trump's call for a ban on all Muslim entry for some unspecified time has really got people in all quarters up in our, well, I don't know how you want to put it, upset. Some supporters, many pushing back, many within his own party. Here was House Speaker Paul Ryan defending Muslims in America on Monday.
Not only are there many Muslims serving in our armed forces, dying for this country, there are Muslims serving right here in the House, working every day to uphold and to defend the Constitution. Some of our best and biggest allies in this struggle and fight against radical Islamic terror are Muslims, the vast, 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 vast majority of whom are peaceful, who believe in pluralism, freedom, democracy, individual rights.
Paul Ryan. But here's Donald Trump Monday night in South Carolina saying, we've got to get in there and look at these mosques.
We have to look at mosques and we have to respect mosques. But yes, we have to look at mosques. We have no choice. We have to see what's happening because something is happening in there. Man, there's anger.
And here's President Obama. Well, look at that. Here's President Obama Sunday night talking to the nation from the Oval Office, talking about both rejecting discrimination, but also about a Muslim's responsibility to get at what he called misguided ideas.
Just as it is the responsibility of Muslims around the world to root out misguided ideas that lead to radicalization, it is the responsibility of all Americans, of every faith, to reject discrimination.
Two parts to that. Reject discrimination from the president, but also, and Rizwan Jaka, let me bring this to you. He says it's the responsibility of Muslims around the world to root out misguided ideas that lead to radicalization. What do you say to that, Rizwan?
So, Tom, thank you. Let me give you some statistics here. So according to research from North Carolina, Charles Kurzman and other institutes, approximately from a statistical sample of terrorist attacks or attempted terrorist attacks, 40% of the arrests of attempted terrorists, the tips have come from American Muslims. And this is over a several year period. And so we American Muslims have been protecting this nation, have been seeing something, saying something, and partnering with law enforcement. Our mosque, the with our 10 branches and satellites, we're a national partner with FBI headquarters. We're a regional partner with the Washington field office of the FBI and advising the Department of Homeland Security and Department of Justice. And the other statistic, the FBI database from 1980 to 2005 has a historical record of terrorist attacks. 94% of attacks are done by non-Muslims and 6% people that claim to be Muslim. In Europe, Europol database, 2% of terrorist attacks are done by people that claim to be Muslims and 98% by people that are not Muslim. And so we have to put things into perspective in that reality. 190,000 murders over a several-year spectrum by done by non-Muslims, you know, compared to 160 people killed by terrorist attacks in the U.S. So the one thing is that we are partnering. We have to put it into perspective, and we have been working on national security. We've established counter-radicalization think tanks. There's a small, tiny fringe, a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of people that are susceptible to the extremist ideology and the ISIL message. And we are working on, you know, counter-radicalization
efforts. How does that work? Describe that, because you heard Donald Trump just there talking about anger in that community. He says, man, there's anger out there. But maybe a muted form of that from the president when he said, you know, Muslims around the world need to root out misguided ideas that lead to radicalization. Do you acknowledge that, that there's a set of misguided ideas that's problematic at right now? I guess it'd be hard not to. And how do those get addressed? That's something different than tips. Tips are a big deal. But the idea, this battle of ideas itself, how do you see that playing out, Rizwan?
There's a horrific extremist ideology that we must counter, absolutely. It's more of a problem overseas than it is here. It is 95% of the radicalization of this tiny fringe susceptible group is done in the internet. Actually, 95% is happening in the internet. Actually, ISIL recruiters are telling their potential targets to stay away from the mosque. They don't, because they know the mosque actually is an immunization to radicalization. And so the mosque is the first line of defense. Actually, ISIL recruiters are saying your mosque is a sellout, so don't go to the mosque. They actually try to isolate these tiny fraction susceptible population from their families. And so it's the same thing. There are over 800,000 gang members in the United States. They are isolated from their communities. When you isolate someone, they can go into a bad path. Mosques are the first line of defense and are immunizing people and preventing people from going down that wrong path. But there is a ideology, and American Muslim leaders, international scholars are countering that ideology, and it takes a sustained effort to continue to do so, and establishing think tanks and ideologically countering the points. But the susceptible population in the U.S., that's small, tiny, you know, there's 300 to, you know, youth that have been suspected of going overseas, and there may be a few hundred that are on, you know, surveillance or what have you. You know, there's more issues than just ideologies. There's mental health. There's depression. There's family problems. So this is a much more complex thing that mental health, you know, counselors, as well as religious scholars, as well as you know, parents need to come together to you know, address it, and we are, and it's a growing effort, and we will continue to do so.
Breaking news as we speak today that the FBI director is now saying that the San Bernardino shooters were both radicalized at least 2 years ago. So, as you say, it can reach out; it can reach into the United States. Hussam Elush, there in California, what do you make of the president's call to on Muslims, saying it's their responsibility to root out misguided ideas that lead to radicalization? Do you welcome that challenge, if that's what it is?
No, I reject that, because this is an attempt to shift the blame on one community. This is a global problem. Muslims have a role in countering it, absolutely, and they have been throughout history and including today, for current times. Our scholars, almost unanimously, I can't even think of one major scholar, one middle-level scholar in the world today who has not vocally, clearly, unequivocally condemned the sick ideology of ISIS. ISIS is not made up of religious people. ISIS is made up of former Ba'athist army officers in Iraq. We destroyed Iraq. We went to Iraq and destroyed. Believe me, no one spoke against Saddam more than me, probably. Saddam is a murderous thug. But the way we went to Iraq and dismantled the state of Iraq and created the chaos there, and then installed a very sectarian regime that engaged in similar atrocities as Saddam Hussein did, alienating a whole community, pushing them into the arms of extremist groups such as Al-Qaeda and then ISIS. Same thing in Syria. The president, I wish the president admitted his completely failed policy in Syria. It was up to the president. He could have easily helped the moderates in Syria at the beginning of the revolution, who were looking for a democracy in Syria. But he stood idly. He stood on the neutrally, watching, and maybe giving some good words of support to the Syrian people. And people in the administration, including former Ambassador Ford, U.S. Ambassador to Syria, said, if we don't support the moderates in Syria, we would be allowing for the extremists, such as Al-Qaeda, and what came out of Al-Qaeda later on, which was ISIS, to flourish. What is happening is ISIS is a political group that uses some religious connotation to advance its sick ideology and murderous behavior. Our foreign policy is part of the solution, as it is part of the problem today. Yes, Muslims have a role to play. Political leaders in the Middle East have a role to play, and that is to end the repression and the oppression and the injustices and the torture in the prisons, which are forcing people into extremism. And our foreign policy is part of that. We continue. We have not learned the lesson. We continue to support some of the most brutal regimes in that part of the world. We continue to fund illegal occupation, apartheid practices in that region. When we support military coups in countries, in the largest Arab country and one of the largest Muslim countries, Egypt, what kind of message are we sending to young people there? We're sending a message that we do not genuinely support democracy, that we are pushing them into extremism. What's needed is for a foreign policy that reflects our values as Americans, a policy that reflects justice, freedom, and we should mean it. And that will help ease that tension, that political tension that is somehow providing sick groups like ISIS the fertile ground to go and recruit people. So for the president to shift the responsibility to Muslims without taking responsibility for his failed policy in Syria and the rest of the world today is not acceptable. I think we have to realize extremism is a global problem today. It is not a Muslim problem. It's a global problem where all of us, including Muslims, including us as Americans, have an important role to contain, to play in order to contain that very dangerous threat. It is dangerous. A small number, as one of the callers earlier said, all it takes is for one crazy extremist terrorist with some powerful bomb to cause a lot of damage. And we don't want that to happen. One is too many.
Yeah, we've got your perspective there. We do hear the president. I mean, when he was in Turkey, he said there is a real problem that Muslims must confront without excuse. This is complicated. You point to foreign policy. He's pointing to ideas. Everything's at play here. Greg in Springfield, Illinois. Greg, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me. Mm-hmm. I just want to say that I'm really afraid of all the Islamophobia that's been going around lately, especially from so many people who've never even met a Muslim, not from a very big city. And it's rampant here. Everywhere I go, every conversation I have about politics, it's the same thing. It's anti-Muslim rhetoric, Islamophobia, and I don't understand it. There's a lot of killings that go on in America that are not perpetrated by Muslims, and this all seems like a big distraction.
But Greg, when you look out and you see an Islamic State and you see beheadings and you see all the rest, and then you see people in San Bernardino, the wife anyway, pledging loyalty there, and then the murder. I mean, it's not that hard to see how people start to connect dots in a way that makes them afraid.
Well, like your panelist said,
Greg, we're losing you there. Let me get one more. Peter in Boston. You're on the air, Peter.
Yeah, Tom, thank you. Listen, I've been an attorney 40-plus years, and I'm absolutely support any contention of backlash to the Muslims, and the laws are there to protect them. But I'm somewhat outraged that the Muslim community thinks they're victims. It's Islamic terrorists who have caused this.
Caused what? I mean, we've got all kinds of mass shootings. They're not all Muslims. Caused what?
No, I understand. I'm just talking about the recent one here, and it just happened.
Okay.
And again, Trump is over the top. I agree with that. But the Islamic terrorist did the murders out in San Bernardino in California. I mean, that's what I'm concerned with.
Yeah, but Peter, when Dylann Roof goes off in Charleston and kills all those people, I don't go down the street as a Christian worried I'm going to be, beaten up.
But let's also, people, when you talk about statistics, let's 9/11, 2,000 plus people were killed by Islamic extremists. I mean, it wasn't, you know, people kind of call that out, that that's not accounted. I'm only saying that there's a lot of people, and again, I have no problem, you know, there's laws out. If anybody reacts in a criminal way, they should be prosecuted against Muslims. And I have no problem, but there are legitimate concerns that American people have about Islamic extremists. And I think...
Peter, we've got it. Our time is short here. I have heard Rizwan Jaca and I think everybody here stepping up and saying, yes, we want to confront when extremism comes in. Camila Rashad, do you hear the right message about this from the pulpit in your mosque?
Absolutely. I mean, there has been consistent and strident condemnation of all of these acts. And so at some point, we have to ask ourselves, how much more do you want the Muslim community to do when we, at every single terrorist attack, every single mass shooting, come out very forcefully and say, this does not represent who we are. It does not represent our religion. And so, you know, when President Obama says, you know, we need to root out misguided ideology, which leads to radicalization, I would say that statement also applies to Trump, that there's a misguided ideology that he has consistently put forth. And we see thousands of people cheering, you know, in support of what he's saying about a ban on Muslims, about registration. And we know that this leads to a very dangerous place. So I wanted to address the previous caller and let him know that, yes, there could be concern about the potential threat of Islamic extremists. But that is assuming that American Muslims are a part of that misguided ideology, and we are not. So when we begin to lump a group of American citizens and make it and kind of conflate the issue.
Well, I mean, Saeed Farouk appeared to be.
Yeah.
Tashfeen appeared to be on her way to marrying him and presumably becoming an American citizen one day.
Well, but again, these we're talking about two people,
yep.
in a community of hundreds of thousands of American
Millions.
Citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, as you said, we would not profile Dylann Roof or Adam Lanza or Robert Deere and say that they are representative of white Christian men. That would be unfair. But we're somehow asked to do that when it comes to American Muslims, and it kind of defies logic.
This conversation not nearly over. We definitely feel the unease and reach out to American Muslims, nothing to do with terrorism, who may feel in a really awkward position right now. And we hope that and this time passes. We're grateful to the three of you for helping us peer in here in a fellow feeling way to look at what's going on. Camila Rashad at the University of Pennsylvania, Muslim chaplain there. Thank you, Camila, for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Rizwan Jaca at the Adams Mosque in Sterling, Virginia. Thank you, Mr. Jaca.
Tom, thank you, and peace be with you.
And peace be with you. Hussam Elush, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, and I will remind the caller, we're all in it together. We're all victims. There's no
This is
them.
On Point.